everybody. You are listening to This Show Is So Gay. I'm your host, Ken Schneck. This is episode number 294, almost at 300, but not quite there yet. As always, you can get in touch with us by dropping us a line, send an email on over to ken@thisshowisogay.com. Stroll on over to thisshowisogay.com to learn all about the fun things happening with our little gay radio show that could. You can follow us on Twitter. The handle is This Show Is So Gay. And of course, go on over to that Facebook, type in This Show Is So Gay, like us, because we sure as heck like you. So much to get to on this week's episode. We must get started. I have to tell you, one of my favorite things about doing this show for so freaking long is that we get to feature all of these incredible singer-songwriters, and this week is no exception. Chris Riffle has been writing and performing folk music for years and years and years. He developed a solid following in the great state of Washington, opening for Death Cab for Cutie, and in New York, collaborating with members of The Mars Volta, Ola Bell, and Anthony and the Johnsons. On the touring front, Chris's travels have taken him all over this country. His last EP, Another Dream, was in rotation at over 150 stations and was featured on Sirius XM. The Deli New York called Chris New York's unlikely mellowcore champion of the year. We're going to deconstruct that. Direct Current described Chris as a writer and performer of uncommon depth and intimacy. Nick Drake meets Elliot Smith. His new single is called Shake Me Up, and it is the first single from his upcoming 11-track album, Out of Town, which is set to release in just a few months. Chris Riffle, welcome to This Show Is So Gay.
Thank you so much. Thanks for having me.
We have so much ground to cover, Chris. Are you ready?
All right, I'm ready.
All right, let's do it. We will start with you as we start with all of our singer-songwriters over the years. Tell our listening audience, Chris, why the medium of music to get your voice out there?
It's always worked for me. I grew up, my dad was a singer-songwriter musician, and so I used to always listen to him playing music, and it was just ingrained in me as a young kid as a great way to communicate, and I always wanted to do it. And once I started doing it, I kind of started out more in the background doing music stuff in a band, and once I started actually singing and writing my own songs, it was just like the greatest feeling, and communicating with people, and I don't know, it wasn't like a conscious decision, like this is going to be the medium for me, it just was.
Nice. Now, what about style of music? Was folk always your thing?
I listen to just about every kind of music, actually. I like a huge variety of stuff. I really like Brazilian music.
Nice.
I, for a while, was lucky to have, my dad had two roommates that were both really talented at guitar when I was in high school and taught me a lot of things, and listened to Antonio Carlos Jobim, and so I kind of learned a variety of stuff. Folk, I think, encompasses the style of music that I write. It's always a difficult thing to describe because I think it's not just folk music, but based on that idea of, I don't know, Bob Dylan, like writing a poem and making this song out of it. It's not necessarily, I don't think of it as rock. I don't think of it as jazz, but
I don't even know what mellowcore means. I don't even know that that's a word that I've ever heard of. And then to hear someone say that you're an unlikely mellowcore champion, I don't even know what any of that means.
Yeah, that, it's like the toughest question to describe style.
Right.
And what that means and what I think my music is, because of course in some ways I think I'm very versatile in music, because I imagine songs in a lot of different ways, and sometimes they end up in one way, but I could also hear them with an electronic background, or I could hear them with, you know, all kinds of things. But I would like to hear what more mellowcore music is too, but I think like the XX, which is very mellow and has simple things going on in their songs, I would imagine that to be kind of mellowcore. I'm not exactly sure. I got that in a review and was and I liked it. For some reason, it kind of made sense to me. But
I'm like, what makes him unlikely? I think you're likely. I didn't know what that meant.
I don't know. I don't know. I don't question it. I just, you know.
You just go with it. Have you ever heard of anyone ever listening to one of your songs without a candle burning? Because I think that that's one of the ways that I would describe your music.
That's awesome.
I don't think it's ever happened. I'm putting that out there right now.
I don't think so.
If there's not a candle burning before they press play, there soon will be one right after.
A wood fire.
A wood fire.
Acceptable as well, I think.
Look, I'm not saying there's not different degrees of candle, Chris. There's different degrees of fire.
Yeah.
I'm just saying that's one of the hallmarks, I think, of your songs. I will also say I saw that you have played in yoga classes. I don't even do yoga very well, but I would imagine that your music would help me.
You know, thanks. It's been a lot of fun. It's one of my favorite places to play now. It all kind of started with my mom, who fortunately loves my music and is calling me up and was listening to one of my last albums, doing yoga to it, and just said, oh, it's, you know, so perfect. I've got this whole routine down. And it was a 5-song EP, and she was just like, you know, it's perfect for the whole album, and, you know, each song works out so well, and you should think about that. And then, meanwhile, I was booking a tour on the West Coast, and my cousin owns a yoga studio in Portland, and I was like, you know, this could be fun. We could try this. And Jimmy Shibago, who's my producer that I've been playing with and just an amazing musician, instrumentalist, tours with me. And he kind of brings, you know, the production stuff into this album of these, you know, mellow guitars, doing stuff in the background and organs and keyboards and all this stuff. And he, on tour, was playing a 6-string bass through all these pedals, and sometimes it would sound like an organ, and sometimes it would sound like a guitar, but also it would sound very mellow. And in a yoga atmosphere, it is very conducive to this kind of ambient, very mellow vibe that we can kind of get into, and I can be strumming the acoustic guitar, and then he's doing this, and then... So we just went with it, and... It's fun. We would turn like one song into a 10-minute or 15-minute kind of instrumental thing, and would, you know, very carefully time when the lyrics would come so it would fit with something. And I like it because it's probably the most challenging thing to do, performing. It's not easy. It's not like, okay, I'm going to go play this 5-minute song that I've played 100 times. It's like, I'm going to try to fit in with this rhythm of this class and what all these people are doing and moving, and figure out how to sing so that I'm not being, you know, in the way. And it's really fun.
We got to get you to come to Cleveland and play my Bikram class. You'll be a little hot, Chris, but it's an enjoyable experience.
That could be hot. Could be hot.
It would be. It would be. So talk to me about some early memories. What's your first memory of being on stage performing?
Let's see. That is a good question. Well, definitely in high school, I was in this band that started with my best friend Tony called Chrysler Stewart and the Stewardesses. And it was like a lounge pop band and very sarcastic, very different than what I'm doing now. And I would usually dress in as much silver as possible, and so would Tony. And he was Chrysler and I was Stewart, and then there were three girls, one of them being my sister, and then two other of our good friends, and they would all wear sequin dresses. And we were all about, like, having a good time on stage and putting on this show, and the songs were very ridiculous. Like, we had a song called Score City. We were mostly just making fun of other people, I think, in our high school that we thought were strange. So that was, like, my first kind of really getting on stage, but it was a very, you know, it wasn't, like, putting myself out there. It was, like, acting, which I also did in high school, and I've always enjoyed. So I didn't feel as vulnerable as, like, getting up and being like, this is a personal song I wrote about, you know, this or that, or a breakup or something, and having everybody listen to it. It was very easy to get up and just play electric guitar in a band. So I did that for a while, and first time I got up and sang a Jan and Dean surf song, and everybody was like, really excited, and it was just such an exciting feeling. That was like the first memory of actually really singing a song in front of a bunch of people.
Well, two things. First of all, I don't think that I even own anything silver, so I don't know what that's about, that you had all these things to choose from. Second, all of our listeners are going to be writing in wondering when the reunion tour is.
Oh, it's a good question. I don't know.
Something to work on. Something to work on.
There's been some talk. We'll see about that.
We're putting it together.
We would always just find things at thrift stores. You know, whatever was sparkliest was usually the best.
I love it. I love it. That's like a whole life motto. Again, listeners, we are here with singer-songwriter Chris Riffle. Let's talk about The Sun Is Up, which is an album you put out in 2003, which 2003, you know, a good solid 11, 12 years ago, and you had tracks on that album that were extraordinarily just putting yourself out there, in particular Wonder Boy, XY Boy, of you being a male artist singing about other men, which, you know, even right now there are any number of artists who are not doing that, much less 11, 12 years ago. Was that a conscious decision or a struggle of a decision that you made back then?
It wasn't a struggle at all. Like, I never really questioned it, which, I think it was fortunate that I grew up with just very supportive family and friends around, so I didn't question that. But it was very exciting. I put that out kind of on my own, and I didn't really know what to do with it. I brought it to some record stores, like Tower Records, and, you know, got picked for some things, but it didn't, I always felt like I would have liked to do more with that.
You recently got married, not that long ago, but I was looking at wedding pictures today. That looked like a lovely day.
Oh, it was amazing. It was really, really amazing. Yeah, it was definitely perfect. It was in Washington State, on this beautiful island, San Juan Islands, and just amazing. 110 people there, and yeah. It was so great. I'm from my family, and my mom has 9 brothers and sisters, so it's kind of like a big family. And it was really cool. It was definitely the first, you know, gay wedding in that family, certainly. And just really amazing to see all my aunts and uncles there and everyone be supportive and kind of starting to take that for granted. But
now, did you sing at your own wedding?
Yeah. I did.
Were you? I would imagine you were very nervous.
Not nervous singing. That was. I don't really get nervous singing very often. I've just, I don't know. I've done it so much for over the years. I feel strangely comfortable behind a microphone. But that was amazing. Looking out and seeing everybody, and you know, the stars and the water. We were right on the water and singing a song that I wrote for Tim, who's my husband, and just having it be like our wedding day. That was really amazing.
I love it. I love it. Now, talk to me about how being an out artist, or even just how being gay in general. It's one of my favorite topics to talk about. We've had so many singer-songwriters on the show over the years, and they've had all of these myriad experiences of how being gay, how being an out artist has affected their lyrics. How do you think it's affected you?
Well, you know, I mean, with that first album, it was really what I was thinking about. It was very much like everything I was thinking about. You know, it's like, oh my gosh, I like this guy who's straight and I'm not, and what do I do about that? And I feel like when I was that age, it was very much a big part of my life. And everything I was writing was about that. And I think I don't think about it as much, and I have, you know, just a collection of friends, and also probably where I live. Like, I think if I lived in a place where it wasn't as accepted,
right,
then it would probably still be just as much a part of my lyrics and what I have to say. But, you know, I remember moving to New York City and going into a bank, opening a bank account, and just kind of finding myself, say, you know, talking with the banker who just seemed just the stereotypical in a suit, kind of almost conservative, just being like, yeah, I moved here because of my boyfriend, and noticing that he didn't even flinch. Yeah. And like being like, I probably wouldn't have been comfortable enough to say that in many other places.
Yeah.
And And it's no big deal to, like, let him know that, even though I didn't need to. Like, my banker doesn't really care. But, so I don't really think about it as much, I think, in my lyrics these days. So I guess the answer to that is it used to affect me a lot, but now I don't really think about it a lot.
What is it like trying to make it as a singer-songwriter in New York City? You know, I look, I'm from New York City. Those are my old stomping grounds. I love it there more than anything. But I love hearing from my friends. Well, I don't always love hearing about their struggles. But I know that it can be such a challenge to get into the scene there and develop a following and to really make it in New York City. How do you navigate that world?
It's definitely a struggle daily. I love it. I love the community here. I love the amazing talent of musicians here. At first, I spent the first 6 months I lived here, I think, just being really nervous about it, like not really knowing how to get out there and play music. And I went to an open mic, and I remember hearing from somebody, a friend of mine who lived in New York, that said something to the effect that people here wouldn't really get my music, that I'm too mellow or too passive or something for people in New York. And I think I kind of took that in, and I was like, oh, yeah, maybe they won't. And I just went to an open mic, and it was like this amazing, great reaction. People were like standing up and clapping along with a song I was playing, and the guy was like, when can I book you a concert? And it was just amazing. And I don't know if it was something people were like, this is different. He's playing this more mellow, whatever it is that I do, somehow was different in a way that you liked it. And I don't know. I found a great response. I've been really lucky and fortunate, and I think that that has gone a long way. We have a place in the East Village, and the living room, I was playing there a lot, and that was a great community there. I've been playing at the Rockwood a lot now, and I like the venues around here. I don't know, like, I didn't quite find that community in Seattle the way that I found it here, so it's been really wonderful and supportive, and getting people to shows, for some reason, has been a lot easier in New York than I thought it was in Seattle. Like,
nice.
A lot of people come out, and yeah.
Nice. What do you got coming up? What are you so excited about? I would imagine, you know, with an album coming out in just a few months, that's pretty much consuming your attention.
Yeah. Well, I actually just got it in the mail today, so I'm like...
Whoa!
I'm thumbing over it, looking at it.
Okay, so you just got your album today. What kind of ear do you use to listen to this? Are you extraordinarily critical? Are you like, nope, it's perfect? How do you approach this?
Well, I mean, I've been listening to the tracks that are mastered and done for a couple months, probably.
Okay.
And we went into the studio, and, you know, if I had an unlimited budget, this album probably would have been out a year ago, but I sometimes have to make decisions based on saving up money to do this and that. And so we went into the studio to record this last summer or a little before that, and then spent some time on it and then mixed it and then mastered it. And I wanted to make some music videos to put out to promote it before, so we did all of that, which was a lot of fun. I've never really done such extensive music videos before. So I've been hearing these songs for quite a while.
Yeah.
And at first I was listening to them, critiquing them, you know, a lot, thinking, oh, maybe we should have put the guitar a little quieter there, or maybe we should have done that, and, you know, constantly. And then I kind of, once they got mastered, I think I let go a little bit of that. And then I probably took like a week break and would listen to it and then be excited and amazed again, and then take a break and then be amazed. And I kind of goes back and forth of listening to it critically, and then just relaxing and being like, this is great, I'm really happy. And I definitely am not critiquing it anymore, which is good.
I feel like you must be going through so many candles.
Yeah, we have a lot of candles.
Yeah, I would imagine. Because, again, we're going to play some of your music. We're going to play two of your songs this episode, and people are going to understand. We're going to make Yankee Candle stock go up just in this episode alone. We got to get them to sponsor you.
Awesome. That's a good idea.
All right.
Great idea.
Just putting it out there. All right. Well, let's talk about your music. We haven't done this in a while, so I'm kind of excited. This is the part of the show, Chris Riffle, where we make you, our guest, do a little bit of self-analysis based on your own music, So if you need to do it in the third person, that's fine. But we're going to name a couple of your tracks that we'll be playing this episode. And you tell our listening audience what these tracks say about Chris Riffle. Are you ready to go?
Okay.
All right. Tell our listening audience what Shake Me Up says about Chris Riffle.
So what it says about me, it's basically about, I think when I started out writing, everything I wrote was about, this guy that I have a crush on, but it's too hard for me to talk to him, or this other guy that I like, about something, like literally I'd play an entire, 12 song set, and every song would be like, so this is about this boy that I, and there were always complications, and there were always problems, and some reason why it wouldn't work out, and I feel like I spent a long time writing like that, and then, I got in a relationship that was good and happy, and there was that fear of, oh my gosh, maybe I'm happy and maybe I'm not going to be writing this much. And, but I actually didn't really experience that. I kept writing. And this is a song about, basically being married and, constantly not being bored, feeling like, we have plenty of crazy nights that I, the next day we're like, oh my gosh, what's going on? And plenty of conversations, and it never, I don't know, it doesn't seem boring or what you would imagine marriage to be like at all. It doesn't feel like we're stuck or we're supposed to be this person to somebody else. It feels like we're still individuals that are growing, and it's kind of about him definitely, taking me up and keeping me moving and wanting to grow, and that feeling,
Love it. All right, we're going to make you do one more, a little self-analysis. Tell our listening audience what, and I love this track so much, what Nothing But the Waves says about Chris Riffle.
Oh, I love that one.
I love that one.
Oh, that one says a lot about me. I'm very into meditative, mellow, stuff, partly why probably the yoga thing works, but
yeah.
My dad also lived in a yoga commune for a while, and, so I've grown up around that energy, and I'm very, in touch with it, and I also really like songs that sometimes don't have choruses or just kind of are almost like a mantra and kind of continues in this loop, and it kind of hypnotizes me. And so that song, it has elements of that I really like a lot, that repetitive drum part that's kind of like almost like a wave washing over you. I was so pleased the way that production came out in that song. I was actually... they were mixing it, and I was in California on a family reunion on a train down the coast, and they emailed me the mix, and it's funny the way technology is. You can get this mix on my phone on a train somewhere in California that they're working on in a studio in New York, and so I brought these nice headphones with me, and I was just sitting there literally watching the water as I'm going down this train and the waves and listening to that song for the first time. Was a very cool experience, but I instantly knew, I was like, this is perfect. Some of the songs we made changes, but that one, I was like, this is great. They got it. The drums are perfect, but that song's really about my connection to water. I've always, that feeling of like walking down to an open expanse of water and looking out, and some feeling that you get that is really difficult to describe, but kind of amazing, and kind of like we're part of something bigger than ourselves, and it's kind of a reminder that, you know, there's all these ups and downs in life and different questions that you ask yourself and relationship issues that you go through, no matter how happy you are, and questions that you ask each other. And it's kind of that nothing but the waves, you know, I'm always going to connect to this water, and that's what that's about.
Well, let's close with a little advice for our listening audience. We always get folks writing in saying, oh gosh, I have all these songs in my head, or I just have all this writing and I just can't get it out there. Let's do a little learning annex with singer-songwriter Chris Riffle. What advice do you have for our listeners out there who really want to get what's in their head out there on stage?
Start writing, and start writing poems. Start writing as much as possible. Start writing, you know, get a writing style. Free writing, just write for 15 minutes, write for a half hour. Read it back to yourself. And then if you, you know, play an instrument like guitar or piano, the way I write is I sit down with the guitar and I kind of try to hypnotize myself. I get into this rhythm with, you know, something, some guitar part or some chords, some structure that sounds good and that I like, and then I start singing on top of it, and usually I'll know what I want to sing about, but sometimes I don't, and sometimes it just comes to me, and then I just start writing, and usually I can mostly finish the song, or at least the first verse and chorus, and then come back to it later. But I guess just work on writing and get your kind of style out there, because everyone has such a different style. Some people are very literal, and I'm not so much that kind of writer. I like to write more not obvious. I like poems that people have to kind of think about a little bit and take the whole thing in and sometimes question what it's about and then kind of get it on their own. I don't know.
Well, you have so much coming up. Again, we have this new album coming out in just a few. I feel like it's right around the corner. You already have your album release show all planned Tuesday, March 31st, 7 p.m. at the Rockwood Music Hall, Stage 3, right there in New York City. Exciting times for you, my friend.
Yeah, I'm excited, definitely.
Well, all right, everyone is going to have to stroll on over to chrisriffle.com and learn more about all the amazing things that you're doing. We're so excited for you. I love just checking out your tracks, listening to some old tunes of yours, knowing that all this new stuff is coming out. Your music is so unbelievably accessible and really lyrical to a degree that you know, we don't often get to hear. So if folks are out there listening who want to hear just incredible lyrics and just a total convincing vibe, chrisriffle.com. We'll play some right now. Chris, what an absolute pleasure having you on the show.
Oh, thanks so much for having me. It's great.
You shake me up and down. You keep me off the ground. You hold me in a sound. A cloud that won't. I wake up in the night. Everything feels right. I felt you in my dreams. You seep in like the light. 6 years can go like wine. One bottle at a time. Your love can taste so fine that I can call you mine. I come alive in here with you. I can feel my heart expand. I can find the
right, folks, and we are back from the attic of Fir Avenue. I'm Ken.
And I'm Becca.
It's been a while.
And who else is with us?
Ryder the dog, the gayest dog in the whole wide world.
Jumping around, having a good time.
He's having a really good time. So that clicking that you hear, that's not a stenographer in the corner. Oh my God, we have to get a stenographer for this. Would that we could express to you all how gay the scene is here right now as the recording equipment is balanced on top of a Mr. Incredibles uniform. So it's really gay.
Those spongy abs are holding it right up.
I love it. Oh, you know, I like doing the show with you because I get to tell you things and then everyone else gets to hear them too. But there are stories that I always want to tell you. So one of them is, you know, a student said to me today. So for folks who don't know, I don't know how you would know unless you were there. I gave this keynote speaker at this residential life conference this past weekend for like 400 or 500 RAs from all over Ohio. So really enthusiastic, obnoxiously so. And so I gave my keynote and I made some sort of joke somewhere in there about being a gay Jew from Jersey. And so a student came up to me today and said, you know, everyone was talking about that. I said, oh, about how inspirational my speech was. She said, no, not at all. They were talking about how crazy it was that you just put that out there.
What?
That I think it was the gay piece. It might have been the Jew. Maybe it was the Jew
piece.
No, it
was absolutely 100% the Jersey
piece. I knew you were going to go there with that. But yeah, so apparently it was quite impressive that I don't, maybe that's just part of my privilege that I didn't think twice about that.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, it's interesting that it was of note to her.
Yeah.
I don't think Jersey's that weird,
personally.
Some people, it's just, it's out there.
Your attitude right now is not something that I'm super into. Okay, we have so much ground to cover, you and I.
All right, let's do that.
There are some crazy stories and then an extensive quiz that you will be taking, and we will be determining, me and the listening audience at the same time, an aspect of your personality. And so I'm
so
excited, right? Me
I've
too.
Worked for so much
me
therapy.
Too.
I don't need radio for this.
All right, so it is time in the week for Becca to take a quiz.
Here we go.
Now, it wasn't necessarily meant for you, but I think we're going to make it work.
Okay.
The name of the quiz is, guys, how butch are you?
Let's go. Round one.
There are 10 rounds.
Oh my
I'm
God.
So excited. I don't know that I've ever been so excited for anything in the history of the show than to find out, Becca, how butch are you? You ready? Here we go. You have to listen very carefully.
Okay.
Becca, question number one, you get a flat tire. There's no cell service. What do you do? Here are your four options. Option one, cry a little before walking 8 miles to a gas station.
Mm-hmm.
Option two, grab the spare and get to work. Option three, show a little leg and wave down a handsome trucker. Or option four, grab the spare and wing it. You can figure this out, maybe.
Why isn't call dad an option?
That's not an option.
When this happened last time, I cried and called dad.
So you would probably cry a little or show some leg and wave down a handsome trucker.
I love to think that I would just get it out and do it myself, but tears would happen. I know.
Okay.
I know
so
myself well.
Becca's going to cry a little.
I don't think it's
going too well for the butch count.
I'm weak.
Becca, question number two. Your friend has free tickets to a Maroon 5 concert. Do you go? Mm-hmm. Here are your choices. Option one, nope. A stadium of drunk straight people sounds horrifying.
Mm-hmm.
Option two, anything to be near Adam Levine. We know what my mom would answer. Option three, I'm fresh out of Davidoff cool water, so I'll pass.
Mm-hmm.
Or option four, yeah, who doesn't love their music?
If my date for the night is Mrs. Schneck, you better believe I would be there. If only just to see her watching Adam Levine.
Everyone, my mom loves Adam Levine. Just want to put that out there. Now, but what would you do?
I would 100% be there, given that your mother is with me.
All right. So anything to be near Adam Levine.
Done.
There we go. Question number three. Your brother Adam asks you to join him for a camping trip. Are you up for it? Stop looking at the answers. Option number one. Yeah, sure. It'd be nice to spend some time together. Option number two, will there be showers, toilets? Option three, only if you can stake the tent and start the fire. Or option four, no, but I will consider Palm Springs or P-Town.
I'd be there in a heartbeat. I
so
love camping.
You are going to say, yeah, sure, it'd be nice to spend some time together with Adam.
Yeah.
He's lovely. You have another brother, too. All right, question four. There's a marathon of Top Gear.
I don't know what that is.
I don't either, but I think it's like a motorcycle type show. So let's just say that it's a motorcycle type show. A marathon of Top Gear. Do you watch, Becca? Option number one, is that about sex toys? Option number two, just bought a new car, maybe a couple. So let's say it's a car show.
Uh-huh.
Option number three, cancel all my plans. Or option number four, a documentary on paint drying would be more fun.
I'm going to go with the last one
okay.
for sure.
Here we go. I don't think you're going to end up very
butch. I don't
butch.
Think I'm very butch.
question number five. Hey, Becca, you're hitting the gay village tonight.
Whee!
How long will it take you to get ready? Oh, this is interesting.
Okay.
This is interesting. Option number one, 20 minutes. Quick shower and shave beard trim and ready to go. Option number two, let's go. I showered yesterday. Mm-hmm. Option number three, don't pressure me. It costs a lot and takes hours to look this cheap, to quote Dolly. Mm-hmm. Or option number four, showering, lotioning, powdering, hairing, and cloning can be accomplished in an hour.
Oh, gosh, that's a tough one. I'm a German girl. I recently, a girlfriend was laughing at me as I was getting ready. She goes, what's taking so long? I was like, I'm waxing my mustache. So let's just go with the beard one.
Let's go with the beard one.
I got to pepper in some butch answers into here.
Okay. So you think 20 minutes or you think the undetermined amount of time?
I don't take a lot of time to get ready.
20 minutes, an hour, or an undetermined amount of time?
20.
Okay, let's go with 20.
Let's do 20.
That's fine. Mm-hmm. That one might have been good. Oh, this is a question. Okay, name these two television characters. It's a visual question. Do you know who they are? Is it Laverne and Shirley, Carrie and Samantha, Patsy and Adina, or Gertrude and Alice?
I got to go with Gertrude and Alice. Am I right?
No.
Who are they?
That's Patsy and Adina.
Who knew?
Which actress's voice could yours possibly be mistaken for? I don't know if you're going to know all these people. I think you do, though. Mm. Jennifer Tilly?
No.
Eartha Kitt?
No idea. Have you and I discussed pop culture before? You know I live in a cave.
This is the best episode of this show. It's okay. That has ever happened. Bea Arthur?
I know Bea Arthur.
Or Fran Drescher?
I'm definitely not Fran. Okay, so...
So Eartha Kitt, she was a Catwoman. She was one of the Catwomen, so very purry.
Yeah, I'm not that.
Jennifer Tilly has a high and annoying voice.
Let's just go ahead and agree on A. Let's just agree on A.
Okay, Jennifer Tilly for Becca. Not going well. Question eight. Oh, I already know the answer to this. Have you ever referred to someone as bro?
Yeah, bro.
Yeah. Option one, bile rising in throat. No. Option two, dude, yes. Bro, not so much. That's my answer, by the way. I say dude.
I say
surprising
frequently.
Yeah, I say it a lot. Option three, I experimented with bro in college. Or option four, yeah, man, I mean, dude, what's wrong with bro?
I definitely am. I'm a duder.
Okay.
I'm a duder all day.
So, but is it dude, yes, bro, not so much?
Yeah, I would go with that.
Okay.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
Two more questions. I'm riveted by this. I don't know if listeners will be. I
hope you're learning something new about me.
Ryder, shake it off. Shake it off, Ryder. Okay. Oh, this is a big one. This is a big one because this happens in your life.
I'm ready.
Becca, it's weird that it says your name on the quiz. Your family invites you to their after Thanksgiving football game. Do you accept?
Oh.
Option one, if it's touch, okay. Tackle, no. Option two, sure, you can't wait to dominate and embarrass your macho cousin. Option three, absolutely not. The only time football is interesting is during the Super Bowl halftime show. Mm-hmm. Or option four, throwing a football is so awkward, but you're determined to try.
It's the only thing that the Westminster Dog Show is on. Why don't they
walk five
and play?
That's not one of the options.
Damn it. Okay, well, then I'm going to go with no.
Okay, so we'll do absolutely not. Okay. Last question. Which of these movies is your favorite?
I hope I've heard of some of them.
You have. I just looked at the list. Except, oh, yes, okay, yes. No, you've heard of three of the four. I think all four.
Okay.
Which of the movies is your favorite? Chicago.
Seen it.
Okay. 16 Candles.
I've certainly heard of that one.
Terminator 2.
Okay.
Or Goonies.
Goonies.
All right, and I think it's going to give us the verdict.
Oh,
I'm so excited. This is a Butch thing.
That's a pretty looking man.
I love that the answer is someone you've never heard of.
But he looks beautiful. Look how beautiful
I love him. So Becca's result is that she is Andrew Rannells. And if you don't know Andrew, he actually just took over for Neil Patrick Harris. I mean, this shows how butch I am. He just took over for Neil Patrick Harris in Hedwig and the Angry Inch on Broadway. He's been in a ton of Broadway shows. He's on Girls, but you've never seen that.
Uh-uh.
So this is the description. Uh-huh. No one would describe Becca as the butchest fella at the sports bar, but she's certainly comfortable in her fierce skin, which gets her a lot of male attention. As a 21st century gay man, okay, you can proudly admit to seeing Into the Woods 5 times and know that it doesn't mean you can't take control in the bedroom, no matter what position that may be.
Wow. You know, I'm frightened by the accuracy of that. That was
that's
like one of
why
those,
we did it.
Like one of those weird horoscopes where you're like, yeah.
Right?
You know, I also feel like it's going to take a lot of untherapy to undo this.
Yes. Well, that's the point. I feel that this show is not successful unless it costs some therapy to undo the damage that we have done. I guess let's go to the larger point. There actually was a point to all this. This is a quiz that people are taking left, right, up, and down. It's on the Advocate's website.
Mm-hmm.
How do we feel about the fact? And let's read what the information is. Let me click on the quiz real quick. Did you throw a Super Bowl party without knowing who the halftime act was? Is your pop culture knowledge as paltry as your collection of hair products? If you answered yes to these questions, you may be a butch badass. Of course, we all know or should that anyone's butch quotient is subjective and usually about as important as their shoe size. That doesn't stop so many gay and bi men from fixating on the subject. To indulge your obsession, we created the following unscientific quiz. Have fun and take it like a man. Wow.
Wow.
I don't like that.
No, yeah, the last line is where you lost me there.
So, but I actually got lost a little bit earlier. This idea that like, oh yeah, being butch doesn't really mean anything, but we're going to indulge your obsession. And this is the Advocate, which we now receive.
Mm-hmm.
I should tell everyone, we get the Advocate now in the house. It did come in a white plastic bag the first time it came. Becca thought I got porn and got really uncomfortable. So that happened, even though I specifically checked off.
I very strategically did not address it. I was going to just let it slide.
She went to her quiet place of shame. But yeah, I would like to say that I specifically requested it not come in the white plastic bag, along with Out Magazine, because again, the irony that Out Magazine comes in a white plastic bag. It's called Out. So the Advocate, which, okay, so to give everyone a tutorial, if you don't know, if we're talking about the two largest LGBT publications in the U.S., you have the Advocate and you have Out Magazine. Out Magazine, glossy, very style-centered, oddly put straight people on the cover. I don't get that at all. That's Out Magazine. The Advocate is supposed to be our news source. That is our place where we get all of our LGBT news. They're one of the oldest news magazines in the country. And to have the Advocate putting out their a butch quiz, I actually find to be really problematic. By the way, I'm going to be hypocritical right now and say I would not find it to be as problematic if Out Magazine put it out there, because that's more like them.
Mm-hmm.
But for the news magazine, we talk so much on the show with various guests about the media and
sure
what they have to do to get readers and
sure
clickbait and all this stuff. But I'm just actually, even though we just spent like 20 minutes doing it, I'm very disappointed
yeah
that they did this.
Yeah. I mean, we are inundated with sensationalism in media across the board. So for me to say I'm surprised, not so much.
Yeah.
Disappointed, I could agree with that.
Yeah. So there's that. There's that. Mm. There are more stories. Can we get to, how do you feel about your butch quotient?
I feel like me and what's his name?
Andrew Reynolds. I'm going to play you a clip of him afterwards. It's very enjoyable. He's very enjoyable. So there is a clip that everyone should check out over on The Advocate that is doing some news there on The Advocate. Austin Wallace, who's a YouTube star, he posted an emotional video on his YouTube channel that revealed how his principal called him into his office after the administration discovered that Wallace has his gay YouTube channel out there. And the principal essentially told him, get back in the closet or leave the school.
And what is the principal's right to do that?
Because he's safeguarding everyone in the educational system.
But does he have the actual right as somebody in the school system to say that when it's something that's not even school related? I mean, you and I have discussed, you know, schools who are putting blocks on gay clubs and there's certainly
still
controversy
happening
there.
Yeah.
But this is something completely outside of school. What? How does he have that kind of jurisdiction over him?
I would imagine, so we don't have this information because it was on Austin Wallace's YouTube page, but I would imagine, having done this work, and let me just put out there, the YouTube video is called Be the Change, Gay Rights, and I'm sure if you type in Austin, it'll just come right up. And it's pretty emotional, him and his cute little boyfriend,
mm-hmm,
they're so cute.
Yeah.
I would imagine that the principal is saying that it creates an unsafe atmosphere for students. That's usually what principals say. That's their rationale of, look, you are making other students uncomfortable. It's creating an unsafe atmosphere. It's unsafe for you. So Austin said,
I mean, has this gone to like a school board meeting or anything? Have they gotten the community to rally around this kid? Has he had a chance to defend himself?
The principal told Wallace, according to Wallace, that he, quote, had to go back in the closet, which means I had to delete all my social media, including YouTube. I had to erase my digital impact on the world. And he said I would have to do that to stay at the school, and I could never be involved in another video or do anything for that matter. Ultimately, Wallace said he left rather than continue his studies at an institution that believed, quote, what I am doing to be wrong. So this also could have been a faith-based school where the principal said what you are doing outside of school is not consistent with our faith.
Sure, sure. I mean, either way, good for this kid for just leaving. You know, when you graduate from a school, whether it's high school, college, whatever, you want to be proud of what you've earned. And it would be very hard, I think, for him to be proud of any kind of a diploma from a school like that.
Yeah. That doesn't feel good. That doesn't feel good.
Yeah.
Our buddy Mike Huckabee. How many elections have you voted for Mike Huckabee? Yes. Mike Huckabee, the former governor of Arkansas and possible 2016 presidential candidate, because he doesn't really have anything else to do, so I would assume that that would take up some time. He recently compared homosexuality to lifestyle choices, such as a taste in music and alcohol use.
Just something I do on the weekend.
Yeah. It's just something that we do. Huckabee was responding to a question about how he reconciles his anti-marriage equality stance with having gay friends.
Wait, who are his friends?
Oh, he's got gay friends.
Who are his friends that are okay with this?
Oh, Mike Huckabee is all about... Mike Huckabee is like Alec Baldwin, who, by the way, I also have a problem with. He's your dream guy. Did you just get swoony?
No, that was an eye roll.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, you misunderstood.
I get confused sometimes. It's why I'm single. So Mike Huckabee and Alec Baldwin are these people who say anti-gay things, but then they say, you know, Mike, I have tons of gay friends.
Sure.
They love saying that. Sarah Palin has gay friends, too.
Reminds me of that. Who was that... Who was that? Was he a mayor or a senator in Alabama, I think, back during the civil rights movement? And on his, he was such a nasty, nasty man. On his deathbed, he made this video with a black man next to him. He said, "See, I've got black friends."
Yeah. Dude.
And it was just like the most sad thing I've ever seen in my entire life.
Well, this was his quote.
Mike Huckabee, come on, man.
Mike Huckabee, this is his quote.
It's irrelevant.
Quote, people love him. They love him.
That's
see him as being outside the establishment. He's kind of like the Howard Dean of the Republican side, like someone who's outside the establishment, so he gets the trust of, oh, he's not a career politician. He totally is.
Wait, is Howard Dean the one that did that weird, like, rally cry?
Yeah. Howard Dean was on this show. We've had him on the show before. Yeah. So this is what he said. Mike Huckabee said, quote, people can be my friends who have lifestyles that are not necessarily my lifestyle. I don't shut people out of my circle or out of my life because they have a differing point of view. I don't drink alcohol, but gosh, he says gosh, but gosh, a lot of my friends, maybe most of them do. You know, I don't use profanity, but believe me, I've got a lot of friends who do. Some people really like classical music and ballet and opera. It's not my cup of tea.
So the question then
it's like the same thing.
It's, well, no, listen, the funny thing is that he's saying, it doesn't affect me, I'm on the outside of the situation, but I want to put a stop to you getting married.
Yeah.
Like, how is that? That's the most hypocritical thing he could possibly say.
Yeah. Yeah.
Wow.
Do you sometimes look at drunk people at the bar and say, well, that's like being gay?
Oh, often.
Yeah.
Yeah. I've never separated the two.
Yes. How could you? How could you possibly do that? There was another quiz, but let's put that quiz out there real quick. I don't know if you saw this. So the Mormon Church, they recently said that they will support LGBT non-discrimination laws as long as religious liberties are accommodated. So this is the whole thing. We actually talked about this last week with Maine State Representative Justin Chenette, that these religious laws are still going through in all these states. This is what we're spending time on.
It's amazing to me how we pick and choose separation of church and state.
Right?
You pick and choose where it applies. That doesn't make any sense.
So there was the poll question from the Gay Politics Report, which again, I encourage everybody to subscribe to. You got it today, right? I forwarded it to you.
Mm-hmm.
Did it come through?
I don't know what you're talking about.
I forwarded you an email with different headlines.
Yes.
Gay Politics Report. Very enjoyable. So the question is, what is your view of the Mormon Church's decision that it will support LGBT non-discrimination laws as long as religious liberties are accommodated? Here are your choices. The church leaders did not go far enough. It's a meaningful shift from an organization that's long been at odds with the community, or my favorite always, I'm not sure, too soon to tell.
Uh-huh. And what did the voters say?
The plurality. No, actually the majority. The majority said the church leaders did not go far enough. Do you know, I'm actually in that camp of it's a meaningful shift from an organization that's long been at odds with the community. I think it's big for them.
Yeah.
Nothing's as far enough as I want it to be.
Yeah, right.
Sure, it didn't go far enough. Nothing does. I'm rarely satisfied.
Yeah.
Just want to put that out there.
It's never enough for you, Ken.
It never is. It never is. People are saying the Katy Perry halftime show, very gay.
Have we seen the sharks? Have we seen that? Not the sharks, plural. The left shark. He does not know what's going on.
He doesn't. But there's drama. Do you know I just heard this?
Wait, what?
There's drama around this. People are saying, okay, that Katy Perry, this is about as pop culture gay as I will get, which is a lot for me, that Katy Perry has a feud with your girl, your little songstress who sings about your soul.
Who's my girl?
Taylor Swift.
Oh,
and so,
you are painting this horrible picture of me.
Very butch. so that Katy Perry and Taylor Swift have a feud. And the left and right shark used to work for Taylor Swift. They used to be her dancers. And now the left shark was trying to sabotage Katy Perry.
Ken, stop.
I swear to you.
Stop. You need to stop reading the papers in the magazine.
The right shark.
In the grocery store
no,
aisle.
No, I heard it on Elvis Duran and his morning show, which is where I get some of my news. Now, have you seen the right shark pictures of him?
Meow, huh?
Oh, you did see.
Oh, yeah.
His shirtless pics.
Right.
Holy cow.
He's a babe.
Do you not enjoy Elvis Duran?
No, I don't listen to the radio.
Elvis Duran, I grew up, if folks don't get Elvis Duran and the Z Morning, well, actually, they're not called the Z Morning Zoo anymore. They used to be on Z100. Maybe they still are in New York City. They were local. They were in New York City when I was growing up, and now they're a nationally syndicated show. And Elvis Duran is actually a really fascinating creature. I love him.
Yeah.
I grew up listening to him. Love him, love him. I listen to them on the way to work almost every morning. I turn it off when they do, like, those prank phone calls. I don't like stuff like that. It's not funny to me.
Yeah.
But Elvis Duran, an out gay man, was recently named to Out Magazine's list of the 100 most influential gay people in our culture.
Wow.
So that just happened. But every time he says something about being gay, because it's a nationally syndicated show, and, you know, there are certain demographics of people who listen to the radio.
Sure.
Who are not listening to NPR.
Sure.
And so he always gets emails of people like, wait, what did you just say? And he's been out for years.
Yeah.
But every time he says it, you know, Elvis Duran, I have to say, I'm doing a total rant on Elvis Duran right now. Supportive rant is probably one of the most well-known gay people that we have. He's heard, that morning show is heard by millions and millions of people every day.
Wow.
I want to get him on the show so bad.
Yeah. Why don't you give him a call?
I've tried.
Oh.
I've tried. It hasn't come up for him. So a couple of other really quick stories. A group of North Carolina state lawmakers opened. Again, this is what they're spending their time on. Ryder hates this story. He's licking my face right now. A group of North Carolina state lawmakers opened the 2015 legislative session. This is, okay, so you're in a state. It's one of the 50. I looked it up. North Carolina, totally a part of the union.
Huh.
Totally a part of the union.
Yeah, yeah. Uh-huh.
You would think that they have issues with the economy. You would think that they have issues of race there in North Carolina.
Yeah, infrastructure, education, important things to talk about.
But they opened their 2015 legislative session by introducing a bill that would allow state officials to refuse to perform same-sex marriages by citing their religious beliefs. Mm-hmm. Senator Jeff Jackson, a Democrat who opposes the bill, said, quote, whether it's a prosecutor, policeman, magistrate, or mailman, government offices that are open to the public must be open to everyone on the same terms. But the fact is, that's end quote, now it's Ken talking, the fact is this is what they're spending their time on, to allow state officials to refuse to perform same-sex marriages by citing their religious beliefs.
It's absolutely mind-boggling this day and age that this is what the discussion is.
That this is where they have prioritized this.
I know. It's crazy.
With everything else going on, this is their big priority. So that's what's going in North Carolina. Folks, you are voting for these people.
Yeah.
And you are voting them to make your lives better, and this is how they are choosing to do it. I am fairly sure that the economy needs some work in North Carolina.
Mm-hmm.
I am fairly sure there are some issues with race in North Carolina.
Yeah.
But this is the most important thing. This is the most important
thing.
So that actually brings us to the end of our time here on this show. It's so gay for this week. I know. It goes so fast. But we learned how butch you are. That was big for everybody.
Yeah, and you have to get to Pippin.
I know. I am going to see Pippin tonight. It's going to be a very gay night for me. I'm not sure if it's a date. We'll find out. I'll report back on that next week. You ever go out with someone and not really sure if it's a date?
Yeah, but that's okay. It's kind of fun.
Yeah, it's not. So I'm doing that. On next week's show, one of our oldest friends, one of our oldest friends to This Show Is So Gay. His name is Kenyon Farrow. You can stroll on over to thisshowisogay.com and click on the guest tab and click on Kenyon Farrow. He has not been on the show in 4 years. He was one of the first guests that we ever had. He is one of my favorite people. He does incredible, incredible writing about the intersection of race and sexual orientation. So Kenyon Farrow on next week's show. You guys get out there. You do whatever it is that you do, whether you're a singer-songwriter, you want to get your voice out there as this week's guest Chris Riffle did. He made us light some candles listening to this music. You guys get out there. Do what it is that you do to use your voice to make a difference in this world. And while you're out there making a difference, please remember, why be gay when you can be so gay?
Like a distance.